You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Now it's time to hear from the Green Party's Ricardo Menendez March.
Last week, the government announced a series of changes to 16 national direction instruments under the Resource Management Act that would change the way councils implement local plans and rules. Minister responsible for RMA reform, Chris Bishop, described the changes as removing unnecessary regulations for primary industries and investment, with the main changes being removing freshwater management regulations for councils, removing regulations for the construction of mines and quarries, and removing restrictions on non-intensive grazing of beef, cattle, and deer in wetlands. In that same week, Associate Education Minister David Seymour made a series of changes to the pay parity scheme impacting primary school teachers, where education centers would not need to factor additional and higher qualifications when working out teachers' starting salaries. And just recently, Workplace Relations and Safety Minister Brooke Van Velden recently announced that she'd be making a series of changes to WorkSafe in order to shift regulators' priorities from enforcement to advice. For our weekly catch-up with the Green Party, I spoke to MP Ricardo Menendez March to get the party's take on all of these issues. To begin, what is the Green Party's reaction towards the government's recent RMA amendments?
Well, of course, former tobacco lobbyist Chris Bishop would describe it like that because he's used to selling snake oil. But the reality is that the easier consent for things like mines won't bring long-term substantive economic benefits to our country, but what it will do is put our native species at risk of extinction, risk us having dirty waterways, which could, for example, put at risk drinking water. And there are more productive and, even profitable to the government's own account sectors that we could be resourcing.
Regarding the changes to freshwater restrictions, how do you think that the deregulation of wetland management and water storage will impact councils' ability to manage their freshwater resources?
Wetlands are critical to sustaining biodiversity, to protecting us against heavy rains. And, you know, when it comes to freshwater, we are losing the ability to access clean, pristine drinking water, something that, you know, we've been known for. And so I think it risks actually ruining our image as a country where we look after our environment, which in and of itself could also harm, for example, other industries like the tourism industry as well.
Associate Environment Minister Andrew Hoggard has said that the new freshwater management amendments would make it easier for councils to mitigate the impacts of drought and climate change and reduce the need for over-extractions from natural water bodies. How would you respond to that?
It's just simply not true that this is a government that actually cares about things like climate change, for example. There wouldn't be approving fossil fuel industries coming into our country while then claiming that, you know, they're making changes to make it easier to manage the impacts of climate change. They're supercharging climate change and then just, you know, adding a few crumbs here and there to mitigate the impacts of what they're causing.
And regarding the construction of mines and quarries, Chris Bishop has said that changing provisions for quarrying and mining would just cut red tape and wouldn't undo environmental protections. How would you respond to that?
I mean, it's just simply not true. Mining in and of itself does carry significant environmental risks. Mining in Aotearoa is not an industry that is a major player in our economy. We have other sectors that we could be better investing in. And what we do know is that the environmental impacts of things like mining can be long-term. And so, again, this is just Chris Bishop selling us snake oil time and time again.
Among the proposed changes included a strengthened national policy statement for renewable electricity generation to ease consents for renewable energy projects and removing consent requirements for papakainga housing. Do you think that positive social outcomes could potentially come from this?
Yeah, so for example, take the papakainga housing. It's a drop in the bucket when it comes to what we're actually investing to enable the build of housing overall. We do support increasing the stock of papakainga housing, but not at the expense of, for example, also throwing people out into the streets and away from emergency housing as this government is doing. They're supercharging the homelessness crisis and then saying that they're doing something by investing, you know, a few more million dollars on papakainga. You know, we would instead be building far more public housing and investing more in ensuring that we have access to papakainga housing.
Associate Housing Minister Tama Potaka has said that easing consents for Papakāinga development was important for maintaining Māori connection to the whenua. But what impacts do you think that the new RMA reforms will actually have on mana whenua and the Crown's te tiriti obligations?
Well, I mean, take the regulation of protections for things like wetlands, right? I mean, destroying the natural environment in and of itself is a breach of te tiriti obligations by the Crown, because it's land that was confiscated, it's land that should have been returned. And so, again, this is the government basically breaching its te tiriti obligations all over in most of the policies they're introducing, and then claiming that, you know, they're doing some tokenistic gestures by, you know, doing a few bits here and there around things like Papakāinga housing, which does deserve attention, does deserve resourcing, but not as a way to take away attention from all the harm that they're causing that disproportionately is affecting Māori socioeconomically.
And Chris Bishop has described the current deregulation of RMA policies as being critical to boosting economic growth. But do you think that these amendments could produce their own economic challenges as well?
They will produce economic challenges. And once again, I mean, this is somebody who's used to selling us tobacco products. And so, you know, we're used to the spin from Chris Bishop. The reality is that, you know, economic growth isn't a good indicator of whether people are doing well. We can be the wealthiest we've ever been and at the same time experience record numbers of people being homeless, which is part of the contradictions in this government. The government cares more about lining up the pockets of the corporates that are benefiting from this deregulation as opposed to addressing real issues like low wages, homelessness, high rents, which is what is actually causing people to be leaving the country to places like Australia.
All right, moving on to the next topic. Last week, Associate Education Minister David Seymour made a series of changes to the pay parity scheme impacting primary school teachers. From July 1st this year until June 30th, 2027, education and care centres would not have to offer new teachers pay parity rates, whereas previously teachers would have additional and higher qualifications taken into account when working out their starting salaries. My next question is, what was your reaction to the government's recent pay parity changes for primary school teachers?
It's an absolute slap in the face for the people who are holding up our ECE centres to basically being told that effectively they'll have lower wages going forward. And I think, you know, we already have an ECE sector that is in crisis, and the government is supercharging that by basically deregulating the sector. Instead, what we should be doing is stop treating ECE as a business to make profit from, because our children deserve good quality education and the workers at the ECE centres deserve decent wages because they're doing critical work in supporting some of our youngest.
What do you make of Seymour's statement that employers and those running ECE centres are the best ones equipped to determine a teacher's pay rate?
That's a mess to basically hide the fact that pay parity would have actually delivered better wages than what Seymour is proposing. And Seymour seems really comfortable with leaving some of our ECE centres paying teachers technically, you know, effectively worse off than they would have been under pay parity.
The Ministry of Education has said that the changes would still allow teachers to progress up salary scales, but what impacts do you think that these will actually have on teacher wages?
Every time the government has allowed businesses to regulate themselves, when it comes to things like paying some of our lowest workers, it does not work. We end up having lower wages, the money gets pocketed by the people at the top, and this is why pay parity could have actually delivered decent wages. And we got to remember, right, that like a huge chunk of the ECE sector is profit-driven, which means that they will be prioritizing things like making a profit over things like ensuring that our ECE teachers are paid adequately.
All right, moving on to the last topic. Workplace Relations and Safety Minister Brooke Van Velden recently announced that she'd be making a series of changes to WorkSafe in order to shift regulators' priorities from enforcement to advice. The changes involved splitting WorkSafe's appropriation into four new categories, as well as updating WorkSafe's guidance documents and opening a new hotline for road cones. My next question is, what's your opinion on Brooke Van Velden's changes to WorkSafe?
I think this is genuinely such a silly issue for the government to focus on, because the reality is we actually have a really serious problem in Aotearoa, which is that we have a really high rate of injuries and deaths in the workplace. You know, I myself have attended vigils for example, construction workers who have died on site, and who were not adequately supported. And what really concerns me about this is that rather than putting the energy and focus on better resourcing WorkSafe, on ensuring that actually our workplaces are safe, you know, and I'm talking about construction, things like forestry, and, you know, the more we open up mining, the more likely also we'll end up having more accidents and potentially deaths if we don't have agencies that are supposed to keep our workers safe and emboldened to actually hold employers to account and adequately resourced.
But has WorkSafe been overzealous in its approach to workplace safety, as Brooke Van Velden seems to be implying?
No. Brooke Van Velden is genuinely just spinning this around. The reality is that WorkSafe has been under-resourced chronically and therefore unable to adequately respond to issues of lack of safety in the workplace. And, you know, we're talking about lack of safety that could actually endanger people's lives. Like I said, this country has some of the highest rates in the developed world when it comes to workplace injuries and deaths. And I think, you know, this is putting people's lives literally at risk by moving away from enforcement into simply things like, you know, monitoring and having a hotline for road cones, which is an idea from the 90s that didn't really work.
And that was the Green Party's Ricardo Menendez March talking to us about the recent RMA reforms, pay parity changes for ECE teachers, and changes to WorkSafe. We'll be back after a quick break. Keep it on the B.
That was the Green Party's Ricardo Menendez March.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.